Mr. DuPont leant forward from the other side of his wife. "If one could be right every hand, none of us would be here," he said philosophically.
"I would be," his wife laughed. "You don't think I do this for pleasure?"
As the game went on, Bond looked over the spectators leaning on the high brass rail round the table. He soon saw Le Chiffre's two gunmen. They stood behind and to either side of the banker. They looked respectable enough, but not sufficiently a part of the game to be unobtrusive. The one more or less behind Le Chiffre's right arm was tall and funereal in his dinner jacket. His face was wooden and grey, but his eyes flickered and gleamed like a conjurer's. His whole long body was restless, and his hands shifted often on the brass rail. Bond guessed that he would kill without interest or concern for what he killed, and that he would prefer strangling. He had something of Lenny in Of Mice and Men, but his inhumanity would not come from infantilism, but from drugs. Marijuana, decided Bond. The other man looked like a Corsican shopkeeper. He was short and very dark, with a flat head covered with thickly greased hair. He seemed to be a cripple. A chunky Malacca cane with a rubber tip hung on the rail beside him. He must have had permission to bring the cane into the casino with him, reflected Bond, who knew that neither sticks nor any other objects were allowed in the rooms as a precaution against acts of violence. He looked sleek and well-fed. His mouth hung vacantly half open and revealed very bad teeth. He wore a heavy black moustache, and the backs of his hands on the rail were matted with black hair. Bond guessed that hair covered most of his squat body. Naked, Bond supposed, he would be an obscene object. The game continued uneventfully, but with a slight bias against the bank. The third coup is the sound barrier at Chemin de Fer and Baccarat. Your luck can defeat the first and second tests, but when the third deal comes along, it most often spells disaster. Again and again at this point, you find yourself being bounced back to earth. It was like that now. Neither the bank nor any of the players seemed to be able to get hot. But there was a steady and inexorable seepage against the bank, amounting, after about 2 hours' play, to 10 million francs. Bond had no idea what profits Le Chiffre had made over the past 2 days. He estimated them at 5 million, and guessed that now the banker's capital could not be more than 20 million. In fact, Le Chiffre had lost heavily all that afternoon. At this moment he only had 10 million left. Bond, on the other hand, by 1 o'clock in the morning, had won 4 million, bringing his resources up to 28 million. Bond was cautiously pleased. Le Chiffre showed no trace of emotion. He continued to play like an automaton, never speaking except when he gave instructions in a low aside to the croupier at the opening of each new bank.